Today we speak with David Richmond. David is a former colonel who was injured in Afghanistan and now heads up the Office of Veterans Affairs.
My name is Michael Coates. I'm a former firefighter and soldier. I run a veteran-owned business and I'm an ambassador for Lululemon. And it's in these episodes we bring together all of these communities to support society during the COVID-19 pandemic. We speak to experts, friends, and community leaders to talk about best practice, mental fitness, growth, and the facts. This is brought to you by the Declassified Network, and this is Declassified COVID-19.
David, what is the Office of Veteran Affairs?
The Office of Veteran Affairs is an office in the Cabinet Office which is responsible for leading and driving forward and coordinating across government work on all veterans matters. And we work not only across government, but also with the charity sector, with private sector, and with academia and our international colleagues and allies.
How did it all start?
It came about during this pre-election period last year. And I think, Minister for Defence Personnel and Veterans, Johnny Mercer, has spoken about having some form of Veterans Affairs office for some time. And it appeared also in the Prime Minister's campaign pledges as he was running to be Prime Minister. And then as he came into power and Johnny Mercer continued as Minister for was appointed as Defence Personnel, Minister for Defence Personnel and Veterans, the office was then created. And then it was announced in July and then established in October. And that's when I started and we built a small team. There's still, it's still a small team. There's nine of us just now, and we are going to grow slowly over the coming few weeks and months.
I think there's quite a lot of expectation when it first came about and things were going to change really, really quickly, or things were going to happen really, really quickly. Firstly, what is the need? Why do we need an office inside of the cabinet?
Well, I think for years, when you look back over years, one of the common criticisms of how the UK supported veterans was that there was no single focal point in government for doing it. So there was a minister with veterans in title sitting in the Ministry of Defence, with a Ministry of Defence which had some responsibility for veterans, but actually the delivery of support to veterans in government terms was delivered by various government departments. And actually it was very difficult to find a place to go to get any particular thing answered, and therefore there was a sort of a challenge in coherence across the different policies as things have developed. And to address that and to help other organisations who work with veterans to come together with government, the OVA was created, the Office for Veterans Affairs was created. And I think really that's where it came from. And it's a real, I think, it's a real declaration of intent that the way in which veterans affairs are led and managed and coordinated in the UK had to change. And we were created to do that. And I think also there's a secondary sort of implication in this is that in putting us in the Cabinet Office, it says by implication that the responsibility for supporting the nation's veterans isn't one department's problem. It isn't one department's role. It's everybody's role. And arguably, it's also the nation's role. And having us sitting there allows us to engage with all those sectors I talked about to improve support to veterans over time.
And is it all kind of doom and gloom? Is it all just kind of problems? Is it all like the mad, bad and sad kind of thing? Or is the positives out of the office as well?
Oh, I think you've put your finger on a key issue. I think I look at what is out there already, and there's a huge amount of support for veterans, and a huge amount of it is done really well already. And when I, just as I was taking over the role, I thought as a relatively well-informed veteran, I'd read through just all the things that government already does. And I thought I should know nearly all of it. Well, I think as an optimistic estimate, I'd probably heard of about 60% of it. And therein lies some of the challenge. And I think there's an awful lot of things that are delivered by government departments that people just don't know about. And an awful lot of what is delivered by government, by the third sector, and the support offered by private sector is really, really top-class stuff. Not all of it is top-class, and some of it, clearly, there are gaps in provision that we need to work hard to fill. And that's where the office comes in helping bring some coordination and coherence across where things are good and where things need to be improved or put in place. And I think I describe them as there's a number of sort of baby and bathwater decisions we will need to make, in that it's really important that we don't break the things that work in order to mend the things that maybe don't or aren't there. And we need to understand the value that an awful lot of these services bring to society already. So it isn't all doom and gloom. I think there's a lot of good news. I think we need to be better about talking about that and talk much more coherently and much more passionately about it. And the office can do that both from a government perspective, but also amplify what an awful lot of the third sector colleagues do in support of veterans as well. So it's really a bringing together of all those abilities and all that motivation and sentiment to ensure that the UK really does become the best place in the world to be a veteran.
Mm. Well, so what's been going on then since the summer? What has actually happened?
When we were first announced, the office was essentially me and one other, and we've spent some time building the team and in actually trying to get our arms around what the role and what the task really is. I think at face value, the role for the Office for Veterans Affairs is enormous. And the challenge there is that if we try and do everything that potentially we could be engaged in, bearing in mind that it's all veterans of all ages and all conflicts and their families and all that brings, if we try and do all of that, we'll achieve nothing. We'll start everything and finish nothing. And therefore, we've spent a lot of time focusing in on where can we have the most impact and where will our work have improve the lot of the most people. And I think also in understanding and building relationships with the plethora of organizations around the UK, both government departments, the third sector and the private sector and academia, all of whom lean into the veteran sector and are enthusiastic and supportive of it, and many deliver services directly into it, to build those relationships, because a small office in the center of government mustn't ever think it knows everything. And we don't know everything, and we can't know everything. And neither will we ever, I think, have the horsepower organic to our own organisation to drive everything forward.
David, just on like partnerships and like the charity sector industry, how do you leverage their expertise into kind of benefiting the veteran population, the veteran community?
I think there's a couple of aspects to that. I think the first is you need to build a trusting relationship with them, and we invested a lot of time in doing that over the first few months of the OVA's existence. And I think the second thing is we need to build on the really good work that's in the strategy for veterans that was published by the government at the end of last year, to which nearly every third sector military provider contributed. And I think we build momentum behind a common view of what the best place in the world to be a veteran actually means. So if you're a veteran, and you pop out into the best place in the world to be a veteran, what does it feel like? What was your experience like in transition? What are the relationships you've got like with the forces you left and the organizations which are there to support you? How are they working with each other? What's the role of government in this? What's the role of the third sector and the private sector and academia? And how are they all working together to ensure that the support that you get is the best anywhere in the world? And I think if we can coalesce around a common view of what that looks like, then we're getting to a really good place. And that's going to be a major aspect of work going forward from here.
Is it just about support, though? Or is it about how we can support society in general?
Absolutely both. I think there is so much. I mean, you've talked about it yourself. You know, there's an awful lot of the narrative around veterans is that they're a sort of needy bunch who need supporting and they require a lot of help and they're all mad, bad or sad. That couldn't be further from the truth. About 90% of people leave the armed forces and go on to lead successful and independent civilian lives and have successful second careers. And about 10% in round terms require some form of support. And that might be from really intensive multidisciplinary support to something arguably relatively straightforward. But of course, the discussion and the narrative seems to focus on the 10%, not the 90%. And there is so much that the 14,000 people who leave the armed forces every year bring into society. And it goes way beyond the sort of caricature image of a serviceman being somebody in camouflage kit, a helmet, body armor, and carrying a rifle and a bayonet. You've got butchers and bakers and candlestick makers. You've got engineers. You've got personal assistants, project managers. You've got clerks. You've got human resource specialists. You've got operations specialists. You've got planners. You've got pilots and nurses and doctors. And you could go on and on and on. And they're all coming into society with arguably some of the world's best training. They've been trained for every job they've ever been asked to do. And they come with not only with all of those skills, but also the more commonly understood, they've got discipline, they have a real sense of teamwork, they work much better to we than they do to I, and that's how they speak, and all those sorts of things. They're used to working in an organization with a clear culture and purpose, and when you get into uncertain environments, that's actually been their natural habitat for the last period of their career. And I think we need to be much better about talking about all those things that people bring into society every year to the number of 14 or 15,000 of them. So it's not all about support. So much of it is about shifting these perceptions around our narrative, around our veteran population.
But well, let's look at that straight away. We've already spoke to Rich Sharp from Team Rubicon about how we can impact. So let's look at that. Let's look at how, at this time, in the current situations, you or the OVAC, how the veteran community can positively impact society right now?
Well, I think there's a brilliant opportunity here for the veteran population, veterans who can, to volunteer back into their communities and to continue to serve. You know, when I look back on through my career, I certainly didn't, and I don't know anybody who felt that they served in order to get something different when they left. And they weren't serving with the notion of being treated differently when they left. They served because that was what they wanted to do, the whole load of motivations behind that. And here's an opportunity for the veterans of the country who are in a position to do so, and not all of them are, I accept, but those who are in a position to do so, to continue to serve. And to go back to that notion of service when the country really needs it. We've seen the extraordinarily positive response to the appeal for the National Health Service volunteers. And we see the Team Rubicon now trying to draw together and encourage veterans to volunteer their services and to work, bring their skills back to bear in support of their communities. And there's a really great opportunity here, because I think all the things that veterans have learned and experienced, and the skills they've built throughout their military careers, fit them really well for this. You know, one of the biggest challenges around this period for so many people is the fundamental change to their way of life caused by the isolation that is being imposed for the greater good, and also the uncertainty that exists around it. Well, you know, I think if you've served in the military, you have been trained to operate in an environment which is inherently uncertain when you go on operations, and you become much more comfortable with that sort of discomfort of not being in control of everything. And therefore, there's so much that you can offer back into society at a time just like this.
We spoke then about, you know, like opportunity. There's going to be difficulties as well, and we just spoke about both of those. With regards to kind of the future and with the OVA, what we're doing right now, what is the OVA doing right now, and how are you going to use the difficulties and the opportunities that we have in the current situation to benefit the veteran space moving forward?
I think there's, in terms of what's going on right now, you know, as the body of veterans who are volunteering in their communities and more nationally begins to grow, we will be building a picture which will change the narrative around the current needs of popular narrative around what veterans bring to society. And we have to use that, and we have to leverage that, and we have to do it not just as an OVA, but with and alongside our colleagues from the third sector who do an extraordinary amount of good work in support of veterans, and in the private sector who of which there are many hundreds of employers, many thousands of employers, who would speak, vouch for the benefits that veterans bring. And there's a real opportunity to sort of, I think, as a community, a veteran community, unusually in these difficult times, to thrive through this, because you've got all the skills you need to do it, but also build a platform that you can really push on from as a veteran community in the UK once the COVID situation starts to ease and we begin to return as a society back to something that is approaching normal, whatever that is by that stage. And as an OVA, we've got to lead that work to really shift that perception and build on the views that that people have of veterans and the skills and the commitment that they bring.
Mm. I mean, the shift in kind of giving financially is changing. There's a very much focus on self-preservation and also the NHS, and rightfully so in many respects. Is the military third sector, is the charity sector being impacted in a negative way with regards to kind of funding?
Well, they have. I think there's no question of that. And there was some conversation about this on the radio this morning. You know, that so many of them, the demand for their services has increased because people are in positions of increased stress and strain, and their fundraising has been swept from under their feet. Your fundraising events, which are the lifeblood of funding for charities, have, to all intents and purposes, been completely wiped. So we are keeping a really close eye with our colleagues in COBSIO and in the individual service charities on the impact that they're feeling, so that we as an office can provide as much support we can to them in their efforts to receive some form of support from government in due course. And that will be looked at, I'm sure, in the context of the entire charity sector when you're looking from government rather than simply from a service charity's perspective. But it's really important because these organisations provide really important services to the veteran population, and we can't afford for them to be pulled from under our feet.
No. And are you getting calls from these charities? How does it work? How do you know that this information's there, like they are in need?
Yeah, well, we've had a number of conversations with organisations, big and small, because it's important to understand that not every organisation that supports veterans is a big organisation. And they are all facing their challenges at different scales. So, yeah, we're keeping in close contact. The comms channels are open. The dialogue has been good. I think we've had a particularly close dialogue with the Confederation of Service Charities, COBSIO, who are representing the views of their member bodies and of their membership body. And we will, we'll keep closely engaged on that because it's very, really important for the future success and of the veterans sector or the veterans community, and to ensure that people can thrive on after this COVID situation has passed.
Mm. And what is the long-term situation? I know there's some uncertainty, but do you have a long-term vision? Does the OVA have a long-term vision?
Yeah, I mean, we're here to deliver on the government strategy for veterans, and that's got a really clear vision to make the United Kingdom the best place in the world to be a veteran. And I think that's a really fantastic vision. And I don't say that because I had any hand in writing it. I didn't. I inherited that. But I think it's really good because it's really short. You can remember it. And most importantly, it's aspirational. We want to build towards that. And that's what I think we'll be measured by. It will be measured by the difference that the OVA has directly or indirectly had on the perceptions of veterans, on creating an environment for them to thrive into the future, and on the support that those who need support are receiving, and to make sure that we really are and we really do become the best country in the world to be a veteran.
David Fennell, thank you very much, and we will leave it there. Just once again, we spoke about Team Rubicon a few times during that conversation. Visit teamrubiconuk.org for all the volunteer opportunities. Get signed up.